step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
At Audi Columbus, luxury meets convenience. Family-owned since 1897, we've built our reputation on trust, transparency, and innovation. Browse our selection online and complete your purchase from home. Then, simply stop by to pick up your keys.
Drive home a new 2025 Audi Q6 e-tron for $499 for 36 months with $5,295 down.
The next generation shops online. Experience the future with us at AudiColumbus.com. Buyers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.
See dealer for details. Offer ends 9/30/25.
Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hello.
How are you?
Great. How are you?
I am great. And I'm back forever.
You're back forever?
I'm back forever.
Thank God.
And I'm back better than ever. No, I'm going to miss another week.
Yeah, at some point.
Eventually, but.
We missed you last week. It was a crazy story.
Yeah, what was it?
It was a woman who was sent to jail for 7 months by her ex-boyfriend who framed her.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, this is why I try not to miss a week, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
What was I doing that made me miss it? I don't even really remember.
You went to Austin for a bachelor party. That's what you did.
Yeah, that also happened.
Yeah.
It's amazing how many bachelorette parties exist in one city.
Yes. Oh, totally. But also we're at that stage in life, I think, where we're just going to end up going to a million weddings and also bachelor and bachelorette parties. So here we are. It's a fun time to be alive. But that's not why we're here today.
True.
We're going to talk about some Boy Scouts who got lost in the Grand Canyon.
Okay.
Yeah. So buckle up.
Well, I do suppose that at least the Boy Scouts have some skills.
Yeah.
For the wilderness.
I mean, that is the point of Boy Scouts, is to make skills. I was a Girl Scout for most of my life. That's a fun fact about me. I was a Girl Scout from like third grade until I graduated high school. So,
I mean, you got close to getting all of the things, right?
Yeah.
Now?
The only reason I didn't get my gold award was because of scheduling conflicts and things. Like, I was actively working on it and then I couldn't end up finishing it. So, yeah, I should have gotten my highest achievement in Girl Scouts, but I didn't, and that's okay.
It happens.
Yeah.
Would you say that you made skills?
Totally.
The Girl Scouts are really, they just make the best cookies.
Oh, I love the Girl Scouts. Whenever I see a Girl Scout selling cookies, I will go buy a box. It's my favorite thing to go up to a little Girl Scout and like have that little exchange of like, you know, I'm going to pay you your little $5 for my little box of cookies.
They're so cute.
They're so cute. I love it so much. But anyway, why don't we get started?
Let's do it.
Okay. So our story today takes place in June of 1996. A Boy Scout troop from Bountiful, Utah was on their way to the Grand Canyon to go on a 7-day hike down to the bottom of the canyon and back up.
I mean, this is ambitious. Is this round trip or is it 7 days there, 7 days back?
No, round trip.
Yeah, I mean, still, but...
A week is a very long time to be in the Grand Canyon, like camping and hiking.
Yeah, and how many people?
Like 7 or 8.
It's a lot of people. It's a lot of food.
5 Boy Scouts. And then their troop leader, and then there were 2 guides, or 1 guide and his brother.
It's a lot.
No, it was definitely an ambitious thing to do, and honestly, I'm like, maybe they bit off more than they could chew. They definitely did.
Well, yeah.
The Boy Scout group was made up of 15-year-old Mark Coons, 14-year-old Jordan Weiniger, 15-year-old David Phillips, Andy Davis, and Joel Keeper, and I don't have their ages, but I assume they were also around 15 as well. But Mark, Jordan, and David are going to be kind of our main players in our story today. Guy Davis was their troop leader. He knew most of the boys very well, and he could tell that they were all very excited to get out there and experience nature. This was a big trip they were taking, so they must have been talking about it for a long time and really preparing for it. To go on this trip, the group had to submit an outing request with the Great Salt Lake Council of Boy Scouts of America, which they did on June 1st. Council leaders reviewed each request to ensure leaders were adequately prepared and reviewed the adult to scout ratios to make sure they had enough supervision. And their expedition was approved by both the scout and church leaders from Bountiful, Utah, and so now they were ready to go. After getting near the Grand Canyon's north rim, they camped out for a night before their real hike would begin. So the next morning, the five Boy Scouts got up around 8 a.m. and were about to begin their descent to the bottom of the canyon. Mark, Jordan, and David were very close friends and had been Boy Scouts for a few years at that point and had been friends for a while as well. Scouting for Mark was a very big deal. I don't know if he was an Eagle Scout already or if he later on became an Eagle Scout, but he did reach the highest level of Boy Scouts, and it meant a lot to him throughout his entire life. But the boys had all grown up in the same neighborhood, and they went to the same high school, so they were very excited to hang out and bond on their hike. David Phillips was the most experienced hiker of the three boys. It was June, and the day they began their hike was blisteringly hot. But they felt like they had plenty of water, and before setting out for the day, their leaders made sure nobody left anything behind because this was going to be a very big day. Can you imagine? You're like 14 and 15 years old, and you're hiking into the Grand Canyon in like 110 degree heat.
It's rough.
I'm just picturing like teenagers in high school going on like a school trip. Like that's the vibe, you know?
Yeah.
Like chaperones and all.
Yeah, although this is kind of a way cooler field trip.
Oh, definitely.
But it's 110 is rough, man, no matter what's going on.
Oh, yeah. And it doesn't matter if it's a dry heat or not. Like, that's hot.
Hot is hot.
Yeah. Veteran Grand Canyon hiker Lauren Pace was in charge of their navigation, and he brought along his brother, Earl Pace. So we've got the five Boy Scouts, we've got Guy, who is their troop leader, and now we have Lauren Pace and Earl Pace.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
After a couple hours of hiking, the boys reached the North Rim. It was amazing getting to the edge and taking in the incredible sight of the Grand Canyon. It's the biggest canyon on Earth, 18 miles wide and nearly a mile deep at some parts. It's one of the most extreme hiking environments you can be in. The group had already hiked 3 hours to the area they camped in for the night, and from there they would make their descent and follow the Nankoweap Creek Bed Trail. Nankoweap Creek is a stream in the Grand Canyon National Park, specifically on the North Kaibab?
There's no way.
Not the North Kaibab. North Kaibab side. And the Nankoweap Trail is a very challenging hiking trail, which leads hikers to Nankoweap Creek and then down to the Colorado River. This trail is known for its steep descent, lack of water sources, and potentially dangerous sections, making it a very challenging but rewarding experience for experienced hikers. The unmaintained trail on the north rim of the Grand Canyon descends 6,040 feet over 14 miles to Nankoweap Creek and then to the Colorado River, and it is considered one of the hardest trails into the canyon. Hikers must carry and cache water as there are no sources in the 11 miles between the Saddle Mountain Trailhead and Nankoweap Creek. The creek is a source of water and a welcome relief for hikers, especially after traversing dry desert all day. So this is a very intense hike. And I don't know if the guys knew how challenging this trail was, because when I Googled Nankoweap Creek Trail, you know, it's 2025. Google is a very great resource, right? But it was 1996. So I don't know how much information they really had on Nankoweap Trail.
Also, there's 30 more years of people going in and messing up.
Exactly. They did have their veteran hiker who had done the trail before, so I guess they had like a first person experience that they could rely off of, but still, things change also year by year. Like, you don't entirely know what you're getting yourself into. But yeah, I mean, going back to, this is a very ambitious thing to do. Like, there are a couple of Boy Scouts, 15 years old, taking on one of the hardest trails in the Grand Canyon. Like, that place is no joke.
Oh, I know. But in the spirit of the Scouts, how hard could it be?
You know? Is that the spirit of the Scouts?
I don't know. That's the vibe I'm getting here.
I'm like, you're not a Boy Scout, so.
I think I'm just drawing on dad energy.
Sure.
And projecting that onto the Scouts. So okay. I apologize, but this is what I would imagine the leader might say. Like, how hard could it be?
Actually, the Boy Scouts motto is be prepared.
Well.
And also do a good turn daily, in case you want a little trivia there. That's the Boy Scout slogan.
I like it.
The trail drops 4,000 feet down to the Colorado River. And once they got down there, they could refill their water from the Colorado River. And from there, take an easier trail back up. So their descent was actually going to be harder than their ascent, which kind of seems like that wouldn't be the case. But I guess it was. And they're kind of gambling here a little bit because they don't have enough water for the entirety of their 7-day hike on them when they begin. They only have enough for like the first half, and then they're banking on making it to the Colorado River, refilling all their water, and then using that to come back up.
Yep, that's, I feel like, going to turn into a problem.
So their whole trip was expected to be 7 days. An hour after reaching the canyon rim, the group reached the end of their official route. So most of their trail was unmarked. From then on, they would be off trail all the way down to the Colorado River, and they were putting their lives, basically, in the hands of their navigator, Lauren Pace. When the trail ended, it got very rocky, which was when it started to sink in for the boys how difficult this hike was really going to be. Jordan was starting to get a little bit wary, and his instincts were correct. Around 300 people every year are rescued from the Grand Canyon, and around 200 need to be airlifted out by rescue services. There's a fatality rate around 17 and 185 recorded deaths between 2007 and 2023. So going off trail was a risky choice. And after some time off the trail, they reached what their navigator called the chute, which is a very rocky portion of the hike, over a mile long. It's an extreme descent over boulders, loose gravel, and rock. And Jordan immediately realized how difficult this would be. The hike was getting more and more dangerous, and they were starting to get a little bit worried because they're still pretty early on into this hike. They also didn't have a radio and were well outside of cell phone range. And also it was 1996, so, you know, there's that. But if anyone got hurt, they were on their own. This portion of the hike wasn't just rocky, it was also really steep. And it wasn't just a hike at that point, it was a climb. David wasn't struggling as much. He was the most experienced hiker out of the boys. And so he told his friends to take their packs off for portions of the climb down and hand them off to each other. That way it wouldn't be as difficult. And Mark was very cautious during this part. A section of loose shale, which is a fine-grained sedimentary rock, primarily composed of clay and silt particles, made it even more difficult. If you took one wrong step, you could very easily fall and slide all the way down to the bottom, cutting yourself up the entire way down. So they're dealing with a very steep incline right now that they're trying to get down, and the rocks are very loose and not flat. You know what I'm saying?
It's the climb. You know what I mean?
I do. After an hour of scrambling down in the intense heat, the guys were exhausted. Scout leader Guy was also having a very difficult time. He was having a really hard time keeping his footing and not sliding down this loose rock. Guy took a wrong step and completely lost his footing, and he tried to regain traction, but the more he struggled, the faster he fell and began sliding down the side of the slope covered in rocks and dirt, until finally he landed legs open onto a log. He landed right on the balls. He fell far.
Oh my God.
Like, he fell real far.
How far?
Like, I don't know an actual distance, but like tumbled down a rocky hill and then fell just legs open onto a log. So it's not a good start.
Brother.
And that knocked the wind out of him. The guys rushed over to him, of course, and took his pack off of him and tried to help him slowly stand, because there's really nothing you can do other than just be like, youch,
yeah.
You know?
And you just, You're just wincing for him. Yeah. Take the pack off the sack.
Exactly. Right. Okay. Very good. As bad as that fall was, it could have been much worse. Because, I mean, the worst thing that happened was he fell on his balls. Obviously, it hurts, but he didn't crack his head open and bleed out to death, which he could have done pretty easily.
Yeah, he doesn't have an injury that requires immediate hospitalization.
Exactly. Like, it hurt, but he's okay.
But it is kind of surprising.
Definitely a surprise. 2 hours after starting the shoot, the group was finally at the bottom, and they were exhausted. They had descended over 1,000 feet of, like, rocks and jagged everything. Anyway, there was no turning back from there because the temperature had been climbing all day, and by that time it was around 100 degrees Fahrenheit. The guys couldn't believe how hot it was. They weren't expecting it, but a sudden heat wave had hit the canyon and was going to climb to up to 112 degrees Fahrenheit. Because it was freakishly hot for them, and they had been working their bodies really hard, they were drinking a lot of water, because they needed it. In that kind of heat, and with that kind of exertion, you need a lot of water to keep going, and they were drinking it. Lauren had been there a year before, and it had been hot for him too, but this was way hotter than what he had experienced. They had anticipated the temperature was going to be in the 90s, which still would have been bad, but 110 felt like torture. Especially since their route wasn't in the shade at all. They were in the blistering heat the entire time, so they were roasting. They were only a day into their hike and were already so drained and dehydrated. They were starting to get alarmed at how quickly they were going through their water supply. They had already gone through 3/4 of their water supply, and the only place they could get more water was the Colorado River, which was over 2,000 feet down from where they were, which was going to take them at least a day and a half. And at the rate they were drinking water in that heat, they were going to run out of their water long before they got to the river. As they hiked, the river was all they could think about, getting to the river and getting more water. But the water wasn't the only hazard out there. One of the guys stopped David in his tracks because he had a scorpion on his back.
Oh no.
One sting could immobilize David. A scorpion sting can cause a range of effects, from localized pain and mild symptoms to more serious systemic reactions. Most stings cause just localized pain, tingling, and numbness, but some can lead to muscle twitching, difficulty breathing, and even seizures in severe cases. They didn't know what kind of scorpion this was and how bad the sting would have been, but if he got stung and it was a really bad one, he potentially could have died out there. And scorpions weren't the only things that could have killed them out there. In the canyon, there were thousands of rattlesnakes. There were 9 species of rattlesnakes in the Grand Canyon alone. Getting bitten out there miles from medical help could cost them their lives. And they're
not good.
They're just a couple of Boy Scouts.
Better get it off.
Yeah, they did. They just kind of flicked it off him. He's okay.
How would you react in the presence of a scorpion?
I'd probably lose my shit.
I want everyone to know that you paused for like a solid 5 seconds.
I took a beat to think
about
it.
You really did.
Yeah.
And then just gave the answer that you were going to give. I would lose my shit.
Well, because
well,
part
we can't
of me,
do spiders.
Right.
You
part
know.
Of me thinks that I wouldn't react the same to a scorpion as I would to like a tarantula. Like, I think that would be way worse for me personally. But also, I've never encountered a scorpion and I would probably still lose my shit, especially because I would be like, oh, it's poisonous and it could sting me. And I guess I don't know how fast scorpions are. Like, could it run at me? Because then I'd really lose my shit.
Yeah, I don't think so. But yeah, I think it's less of a disgust and more of like a...
Terror.
Yeah.
Anyway, they did flick it off of him and he was okay. But still, a little scary of an interaction because they're very far from medical help.
Yeah, I mean, just things that would normally be, oh, it's fine. Like kind of turn into big issues when you're this far away from civilization.
Yeah, definitely. That afternoon, temperatures did get up to around 110 degrees as promised. And by 7 that evening, the guys had had enough. They needed to stop for the night, and they were grateful that the sun was going down and to be off of their feet. They were extremely exhausted, but they were already dreading the next day. David did his best to keep his friends' morale up. So he was just trying to hype up the guys, being like, it's fine. We had a great day. We're going to have another great day tomorrow. Yeah. It's going to be fine.
Hype up the boys.
Yeah. And they were stoked to realize that they could see the Colorado River from where they were standing, but it was still very way off in the distance, and they had miles to hike to get there. But they could see it. So David's coming at this from like a glass half full situation. He's like, hey, we can see it with our eyes. And they're like, yeah, but it's miles away. And he's like, hey, we're going to have fun.
Don't be a downer, dude.
Yeah. When Mark first saw the river, it didn't lift his mood because it was seriously far away. The sight of it honestly made him more worried because he knew how low on water they had gotten. And David did still try to keep their hopes up by telling them that they would be there after only a few more hours of hiking. But the day they had ahead of them was going to be just as tough, and their water was almost gone. They needed to cook some food, but they didn't want to use any of their water to cook because every drop they used was another drop they wouldn't have for tomorrow. They became pretty obsessed with the level of water that they had, and rightfully so. I mean, this is a very serious issue.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
They didn't want to let the water boil because it would be a waste. So instead of cooking their noodles, they bit off pieces of the dry square of noodles. But Mark wasn't hungry, which was kind of odd since he had exerted himself so much that day. And that night he started to feel like this thing that he had been excited about and looked forward to for so long was starting to turn into something really, really scary. He laid awake feeling like he had lost control of the situation he was in. Jordan was also getting worried, and he told the guys they should get up before the sunrise to avoid getting cooked again. They knew they would have to get up early to beat the sun, and if they didn't, they were going to be in trouble. But when day two rolled around, they were so exhausted. So 8 a.m. is when they got up and when they started their hike once again. The sun was already high in the sky, and it was already blisteringly hot, but they needed their sleep. By the time they were walking again, they were already feeling their bodies dehydrating and the unbearable heat. They were sweating up to 4 pints of water an hour and dehydrating very quickly. Just before noon, they came to another steep, rocky chute that they would have to descend. The few hours they hoped it would take to get to the river were long gone. They weren't even close at that point, and now their water levels were critical. Both Jordan and Mark had run out of their water. David had begun sharing a lot of his water because he's just a good friend. He just wanted to give his water to whoever needed it. Because again, he's trying to keep their spirits up, and he did still have water, so he was letting them take sips from his until he ran out as well. They were still a half a day's hike away from the river, and if they wasted any time, things could get very, very bad. Guy was struggling most in the heat. He had fallen behind the rest of the group. He said it felt like he was in an oven. He was physically exhausted, and severe dehydration was putting his body under immense strain, and his body just gave out. He fell to the ground and laid back and couldn't move. He was breathing hard, but couldn't get a deep breath. He said when you take a deep breath and you feel that oxygen going through your body, he couldn't do that. The best he could do was take a shallow breath, which is pretty scary.
Yeah, not good.
Especially because he's the troop leader.
Yeah.
By the time the guys realized that Guy wasn't with them, they were hundreds of feet down the chute. So they called up to Guy, since they couldn't see him, and he called down to them, telling them he needed some help. He told them he couldn't go down from there, he needed to take a break, and he questioned if he'd even make it down to the river at all. Jordan told Lauren, their navigator, that they had to keep going. They needed to get to the river. But he told the boys they couldn't just leave Guy there. There was a bit of shade where they had stopped, so they could sit in the shade and wait for him to catch up. But Jordan felt like waiting could be a fatal mistake. He said he didn't want to sit there and wait and die. He told Lauren what Guy needed was water, so they should go down to the river and get him some. And he had a point. But it was a tough call to make. If they left Guy behind, he could die. But if they waited for him, it could kill them all. Lauren called out to Guy, letting him know they were going to keep going down to get water, but they would come back for him. Guy called back, telling Lauren to look after the boys, because there was nothing they could do. There was nothing he could do. He couldn't walk, and they had to keep going.
Wow. I mean, did he just get overcome by heat exhaustion?
I don't know if he was like bordering on heat stroke or heat exhaustion. I really don't know, but he felt like he couldn't move. Like he was having a physical response to the heat that he was experiencing and like the overexertion.
Terrifying.
Yeah. It's also scary for the boys because they're seeing their troop leader, or they're not even seeing him. They can't see him because he's left behind. And now they're looking at the situation like that can happen to all of us. And there's a real chance here that we could die.
Yeah, it's a lot to take in at 15, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When Guy called back to Lauren to look after the boys, they said the tone of his voice when he said that was unlike anything they had ever heard from Guy or even from anyone. He was seriously in distress, and they could hear the fear in his voice for the first time. It was extremely upsetting for everyone. They didn't want to leave him behind, but they were terrified of making the wrong call. Things were getting very, very serious. 2 hours later, the whole group was desperate for water. Lauren remembered something that might just save their lives. As they sat for a moment to catch their breath, he looked up and said, "Wait a minute, there's a creek up there," and pointed up to a ledge and said, "There should be a creek about a half a mile up along the ridge. It was full of water last June." And David immediately popped up from where they had been sitting and said that he would go, and he took some of their water bottles to fill them. Lauren told him there should be trees around this creek bank. But that extra hour of hiking put a huge strain on David's already dehydrated body. But if he found water, it would be worth it.
Wait, David is going, but Lauren is the one that's been there?
Yes.
Why is Lauren not going?
Because David popped up and said that he would go.
And then it's just by the trees.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seems like one of those times where you get directions.
Yeah. No, I think that throughout this story, there definitely were mistakes made.
This is crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, I'm sure the Colorado River is another few hours away, at least.
Yeah. And Lauren, to my knowledge, wasn't a very young guy. Like, I think he was kind of getting up there in age. And David was 15 years old and, you know, had some hiking experience, and he had more energy, I guess, than Lauren. So he said, "I'll go." And Lauren said, "Okay, it's up there." Anyway, when David made it to the top, he found where the creek was, but it was completely dried up. It was dust. And when he made it back to the group, he had to tell them that there was nothing there. It was an empty riverbed. They had no idea how much longer they would have to go on without water or how long they could even last. So they all got up and they kept moving to get to the Colorado River. By that time, it was 2 p.m. They had been hiking for 6 hours and were still a long way from the river. It was the hottest point of the day, and the temperature had gotten to 112 degrees Fahrenheit. Dehydration and exhaustion were taking its toll on the boys. Their bodies were getting very weak, very quickly. Their pace had slowed a lot, until 71-year-old Lauren Pace went down. He fell to the ground. So there's our answer. He's 71 years old. And he's the navigator.
He's still hiking?
He's the navigator.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And he fell.
I mean, he must be in immensely good shape.
Yeah, he has to be. But this dehydration and exhaustion has now taken him down. So the boys rushed to him to help him up. But he told them he was okay. The sun was killing them. He suggested they wait there, where there was a little bit of shade, until it got dark, and then they could keep going without the heat. He told them hiking at night would be less strain on their bodies. But the guys were hesitant with that suggestion. They believed if they stayed there, it could be the last thing they ever did. They felt their situation was urgent. They still had hours until sunset, and they needed water now. If they stayed there until dark, they could all be dead. But at the same time, Lauren was their navigator. He knew where to go. The guys discussed their options. Jordan argued he could just tell them where to go, and David agreed they should do it. Mark wasn't so sure, but if the other two were leaving, then so was he. So Lauren basically told them, "I'm going to sit here, and we're going to hike later on." And the guys were like, "Well, we're going to go on without you."
Remind me again how many other adults are in the situation.
So right now, all we have is Lauren Pace and his brother Earl, who's around his age. So they're both around their 70s. And then there's two other Boy Scouts who are not as main in the story because they weren't as close as the three boys we're talking about. So two younger boys and two like 70-year-olds.
So like the teenagers just were like, yeah, we're going to go.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't make that decision lightly.
They had bad options.
They had really bad options. They did know that going against their leader's advice was a very big decision to make, and it was a risk, but it was the one they felt they needed to make. That's how dehydrated they were.
Yeah, and I mean, Lauren's collapsing.
He collapsed, yeah.
Not a good sign.
No, and they already lost Guy.
Yeah, but the flip side of it is that if you go in the wrong direction, you're also dead.
Totally. When they told Lauren that they were going to keep going, he told them they shouldn't be traveling in this extreme heat. But they told him that they were going to go. And when they left, Lauren and Earl and the other two guys under their rock in the shade, it didn't feel like they had a decision at all. It felt like they had to do it. They were determined to reach the river and bring water back for the others. Back up the canyon, Guy was really not doing well. His body was deteriorating, and his fluid levels were so low that his body had cut off the supply to his sweat glands. He wasn't even sweating.
That's not good.
Yeah. He wanted to sweat so badly, because he knew if he did, he would cool down a little bit, but his body wouldn't let him. He physically tried to will himself to sweat, but he couldn't. Any physical exertion at that point could have sent his body temperature spiraling out of control. If his body reached 108 degrees, his brain would begin to die. He was trapped. He couldn't move, or it would kill him. After some time, he saw a huge rattlesnake a few feet away from him. It was a western diamondback rattlesnake, which is one of the most aggressive snakes in the U.S. A bite from an adult can deliver enough venom to kill a person in as little as 6 hours. Picture this. You can't move because you can't sweat. And if you move, you could have brain death. And now there's a very aggressive rattlesnake sitting there. I just sounded like a snake. Sitting there and shaking its little venomous ass at you.
Thing.
It's shaking that thing at
you. A little rattle.
Yeah. And you just have to not move.
Yeah, it's terrifying. You know what my first thought, though, was?
What?
Kill it and drink its blood.
Yeah, but he can't move enough to kill it. And if you like throw if you throw a rock at it and you miss and it bites you, dead.
Yeah, then you're fucked.
Dead. But
that was my first thought. I had to tell you. It's so crazy to me that they only brought three and a half days of water.
Yeah.
Like they were kind of assuming a best case scenario.
I guess.
Yeah. I guess that's just not how I would have been like, we're taking 10, you know?
They could only carry what they could carry, so I don't know.
I wonder how heavy that would be.
I think the wrong call here.
Truck.
Yeah, like they maybe shouldn't have done that hike. Like there are plenty of other hikes around the Grand Canyon they could have done. Didn't have to be that one. So back to Guy. He was very scared because he knew he couldn't move away from the snake and he was in striking range. The snake was there for about an hour before it finally moved away. So because he didn't move, it didn't, you know, go at him, but it very well could have.
Yeah.
The three boys were making good progress and were way ahead. They were less than a mile from the river and only had to make the final descent until they made it to the Colorado River. They were so close, but without their navigator with them, they had made a terrible mistake somewhere. Instead of the safe route down they were expecting, they found themselves on the edge of a sheer 200-foot drop. They couldn't see any way down from where they were. They could see the river, but they had no way to it. It was a dead end. The three teenage boys were on their own, and they didn't know what to do. There wasn't really anything to do at that point. And the boys weren't going to be expected home for another 6 days. So nobody would be sending out a search party for them. All they could think of doing was just getting out of the sun. So they climbed down a ledge to get to a little shaded area, and they just sat there for a little while. Guy was also losing all hope and decided his best bet was to make himself more visible to any passing planes. As he laid there, he knew it would be impossible for anyone to spot him since he was below a ledge in the shade. So he took out an emergency blanket and set it up on some rocks so that hopefully the reflection would be able to be spotted. But he was all alone and pretty much helpless. When he realized how much of his strength it had taken to just spread out this blanket, he was certain there was no way out without help from somebody else. And Jordan, Mark, and David weren't doing much better. They were in the shade, but as they lay there, they realized that their death by dehydration would be slow and painful. Jordan said there was no doubt in his mind that they were going to die. He felt weak and achy. His head was pounding, and he didn't know if he'd even be able to get up from that position. He thought this might be the last place he would ever be, under that rock. Mark thought about how he wasn't even 16 yet. He wouldn't get to drive or even see his family again. David was also struggling, even though he had been the optimist of the group the whole time. Mark had asked David if he thought they'd make it. And most of the time, David said of course they were going to make it. But this time, David said he thought they might die there. David asked Jordan for a pen out of his bag. He wanted to write a letter to his mom and dad to say goodbye. Jordan told him not to be stupid, they weren't going to die. He told David that not to give them confidence or hope, but because he was so weak, he couldn't imagine moving to give David a pen out of his bag. Jordan had just accepted the fact that he was going to lay there and die, and he didn't want to do anything else. The boys started drifting in and out of consciousness. In this weird half-conscious state, Mark had a dream that he was in a coffin, and his family walked by it, and his little brother covered his eyes as he walked by. When he woke up, he realized he didn't want to die, so Mark stood up, and he climbed up out of their shaded area. He was going to get down to that river if it killed him. He had no idea where he was going, and he definitely wasn't a mountaineer, but he decided they couldn't stay there any longer. So he got to the edge of the 200-foot cliff, and he just took off his backpack and he chucked it off of the cliff. He hoped that he would be able to get down there and pick it back up. He was going to attempt to climb down the sheer cliff. Doing that in the weak state he was in was near suicidal, but if he stayed up there, he'd probably die there, so he felt like he had nothing to lose. The other two guys had gotten up to see what Mark was doing, and that was when he told them that he was going to climb down this cliff. He sat down and dangled his legs over the side before turning around to face the rock wall and start climbing down. Even for experienced climbers, this would be a very dangerous descent. But Mark had no ropes and had never rock climbed in his life. And he was very, very dehydrated and exhausted, which would make this climb next to impossible.
I don't like this.
Yeah. He clung to the side and slowly lowered his foot down, searching for a steady place to stand. As David and Jordan watched, they realized that they had to follow him. Like Mark said, they were either going to die up there or die trying.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This was a ridiculous plan, but they had no other option. They breathed heavily as they started climbing slowly down the side of this cliff. As they began their descent, Jordan asked David how they'd even climb back up this cliff after they got down it. They knew they wouldn't be able to climb back up, even if they made it down, which would mean they wouldn't be able to find their way back to the others. They wouldn't be able to bring water back to them, but they had no choice. At least they would save themselves. They climbed down the cliff, which was extremely terrifying, because if any of them fell, they would die. They also didn't know if the rocks were steady or... they didn't have ropes. They were just doing it by feel.
Free climbing.
Free climbing. Yeah. Incredibly, Mark made it down to the bottom. And when he reached the ground, he yelled up to Jordan and David, who were still clinging to the side of the rock wall, that he could hear the water. David was in bad shape. He was starting to lose vision. He was so dehydrated. But astonishingly enough, all three boys made it to the bottom of the cliff.
200 feet.
Yep.
90 degrees.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I don't know if it was a true 90, but like, pretty much.
Oh my God. I mean, that's truly remarkable.
It is.
No experience, you're 15, and you're minutes from death.
Yeah.
And it's still hot.
It's unreal.
I mean, it's unreal.
I know. Once all three of them got to the bottom, they hugged because they could not believe that they were still alive. They were all amazed that they had made it to the bottom, but they couldn't celebrate for too long because David was showing early symptoms of heat stroke and he needed water fast. Even though they made it down the cliff, they still had a ways to hike. After over an hour, they still hadn't made it. They could hear the water and it seemed so close, but as they went around one corner and then the next and the next, they still weren't there. Each corner they turned, they thought it had to be the next one. Their tongues were like rocks wrapped in sandpaper. They were in so much pain. David kept complaining about his vision. He was shaking. All of them were. They got to an area where there was a tree that had fallen, and David leaned against the tree for a moment before he collapsed. Mark and Jordan ran over to David, but when they got to him, they saw his eyes had rolled back in his head and he was breathing erratically. David was experiencing heat stroke. Jordan knew they were in trouble. Mark was trying to get David to say anything. He had taken a first aid merit badge as a scout, but they didn't train him for a situation like this. Mark told Jordan to go get water and bring it back to David as quickly as possible. Jordan ran with the bottles as fast as he could, and as he turned the corner next, he could see the water was around 100 yards away. So he ran to the water at full speed and felt so grateful. He needed a drink so badly. He ran directly into the water and flopped into the water for a second and took a drink, but he knew that David needed water more than him right now, so he filled the 2-liter bottle and ran back to Mark, who was sitting next to David and praying. Jordan and Mark tried pouring the water into David's mouth, but he wasn't swallowing it. The next thing they could think to do was pour it on him to cool him off. When they ran out, Mark grabbed the bottles and he began running to the water. Jordan screamed for Mark to hurry. When he got to the river, he filled up the bottle, took a drink himself, and then filled it again. When he looked up, he couldn't believe his eyes. He saw 2 yellow rafts coming around the corner, and he screamed for help and got their attention. Jordan heard Mark yelling help off in the distance and hoped whatever he was seeing was real. But it was real, and an incredible stroke of luck. If he had gotten to the river only a minute earlier or later, he would have missed them. The rafters would have passed by without seeing Mark. And even better, the rafters were off-duty doctors and paramedics.
Oh my god. Wow.
Yeah.
You can't write this shit, huh?
No, that's real. That is a real thing that happened.
No, but I guess you can. Like, this does kind of feel like a Hallmark ending to their hike, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's not gonna...
I know, but, you know, this is the best case scenario on steroids.
That's true, yeah. It's seeing rafters in the only moment that you would see them and their off-duty paramedics and doctors is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
Jordan and Mark were so relieved that these people knew how to help David and even had supplies with them. They immediately called for help on their radio, and the river guide was able to contact a commercial plane flying overhead that helped notify park search and rescue crews. But with the night falling, there was no chance of a helicopter rescue before dawn, so they set up a tent and a fire. After dark, Mark and Jordan sat by the fire and watched for hours as these doctors and paramedics worked on David. They had no idea if he was going to make it or not. And sometime around 10 p.m., one of the doctors came over to Mark and Jordan and told them that he was so sorry, but David had passed away. It tore them apart, knowing their friend was gone. And they were so close.
They were a football field away.
He collapsed right before the very last corner that they had to turn.
Oh, yeah, it just makes you think if he would have just let the other two go, you know.
No, there's no, you can't even do any what ifs because...
Oh, we could do some what ifs. You want to, because the first thing that came to my mind is like, he's the one that hiked the extra hour.
That's true. Yeah, he was the one that was looking for the creek up the hill and then, or not up the hill, up the trail. And didn't find it. And also, he was giving his friends water that was supposed to be for him. So his friends got a little extra water and he got way less than them. So there is a reason why he collapsed first, but it's heartbreaking.
I know. It's so horrible. And oh my God, to find doctors in the middle of nowhere and they still can't help him.
I know. They got so lucky, but it didn't matter. Enough. Yeah, it was too late. A helicopter arrived at first light on Thursday. Rescue crews found the leaders one by one that afternoon. Earl and Lauren Pace were both reportedly found unconscious, but were later revived. and thanks to his emergency blanket, Guy was quickly located. The survivors were flown to a medical center in the south end of the canyon, and all were in decently good condition. But everyone was, of course, devastated by the news of David's death. Jordan went on to become a policeman in Utah, and Mark became a dentist. They're still good friends, and they both keep in touch with David Phillips' family. And that's kind of all the information I have on where are they now.
What happened to the other two Boy Scouts?
They were okay.
They stayed with Lauren?
Yeah.
Wow. It makes you think what would have happened if...
they stayed?
Yeah, the three stayed.
With Lauren, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too, but honestly, I don't know that it would have been better because...
I don't know if they would have made it.
Yeah, exactly.
Hard to say.
Because Lauren had already collapsed, and they were that far away from the water.
There was still like a full day.
Yeah. So who's to say if more of them wouldn't have died had they not risked their lives? And the reason they had rescuers come was because they made it to the river when they did.
Yeah.
There was no world in which they were going to stumble upon any other rescuers at any other point. They got so lucky because they still had like 6 days left of their hike. So their families and friends and whoever, there was not going to be any alarm bells raised until a week from then, basically.
Yeah.
So I think the only reason any of them lived was because they did what they did, even though it was so risky and so scary.
Like damn near suicidal.
Yeah.
But they had no other option.
Exactly. Like, that's really the only reason they all lived.
Mark was the one that...
or most of them.
Mark was the one that started the insane descent.
The cliff, yeah.
Yeah, what if he didn't have that dream?
Right, exactly. So I guess you could play the what-if game a little bit, but it's crazy.
Well, that's kind of what we do. Right?
Yeah, there were a lot of things that went wrong and also very right for them to end up the way that they did.
Yeah, I mean, shit just happens.
I still kind of can't believe that they were allowed to go on that hike or like that they planned this hike. There are so many other hikes in the Grand Canyon. Why choose that one where like you don't have enough water for the entire time and you're banking on the fact that you have to get down to the river to survive, essentially?
I'm sure in hindsight looks dumb, but I mean, it's not like they didn't go through their proper channels, you know?
No, they did, but it's just so risky to me. And I guess like they weren't expecting the heat wave, but yeah. I don't know. How do you not, like, don't you know when a heat wave is coming? Like, wouldn't they know from like the Weather Channel or something? Like, I know it was 1996, but like we still had weathermen.
Right. There was weather. I don't know. Maybe they just didn't look.
Maybe. I guess I'm just confused about that part because I know that Lauren had said that he did this very hike that they're doing or that they were doing 1 year earlier. So he had done the exact same hike 1 year earlier in June and his temperature was like around 90 degrees or something. So that's what they were expecting. But it's not that time. It's a whole year later. So it's not going to be the exact same weather. I don't know. I just have questions. I wonder like where did it go wrong? You know, like what mistakes were made to lead them to that point?
Yeah.
Because that's a very high stakes thing to like mess up. It's a bunch of 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds that you're taking out there.
Yeah. I have to imagine they had a little redo of some policies.
I would imagine you would have to.
Yeah. But I mean, to me, yeah, to take children.
Yeah.
On a hike where you're depending on getting there on time without any delays. To get water.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that seems nuts.
Yeah, like the
one thing. And then
it's
also like...
sorry, go ahead.
And then it's also like nobody can get injured.
Right.
On the way there. And, you know, you were saying it was kind of maybe not the most difficult thing, but certainly not easy.
No, it was
easy to, you know, break an ankle or something.
It was one of the most difficult hikes in the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
Like, it's not an easy one. It's a very, very difficult one.
I don't know. Maybe they weren't aware of that, but...
right.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say earlier was the one thing that they needed, you know, like you can get away with not having enough food for a period of time. I mean, like, yes, with overexertion and like extreme heat,
it would suck.
It would suck and it would make your time go down. But with no water, you will die way quicker than without food.
Yeah. And in 110 degree heat.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know how much water would they have actually needed for like 5 days worth of water. Is that even feasible to carry?
Maybe not.
I don't even
which,
know.
Which like is why they shouldn't have done that hike, I feel.
Yeah. All roads lead back to
choose a different hike.
Choose a different route.
But No, I mean, it's just so sad that that was the outcome, because and also it breaks my heart because he was like the happy-go-lucky, like optimist, glass half full one of them. You know, he's like, it's okay, guys, we're going to have a good time. It's going to be good. And it's just, yeah, it shouldn't have happened.
Yeah, I can't imagine being his parents.
No, but it is an unbelievable story. And the three boys that kept going, you know, Mark, Jordan, and David, are kind of heroes for doing what they did, even though it was maybe a little naive, but also like they saved everyone else and they saved their own lives.
Well, yeah, it's like, as tragic as this is, it is amazing that any of them made it.
Exactly. That's my point.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that is the story of the Boy Scout troop who went down into the Grand Canyon. And I don't really know what else to say about that. So why don't we just move on to a bit of a palate cleanser so we can go back to our days as normal. What is your good thing?
My good thing is that I had a bachelor trip this weekend in Austin, and it was really fun. It was also one of the first times I've taken more than a day off since I got my new job. So it was much needed. And I had a really good time with the boys, you know? A
couple of guys being dudes.
Yeah, some drunken tattoos.
And all.
Got.
Yeah.
And...
not by you, though.
Not by me. No. Yeah, no, they... I mean, it was funny. The they kept trying to see if I would do it. And I'm like, no. There was no opening. I was like, absolutely not. So...
I don't know how open I would be to a drunken tattoo, but I could be convinced, probably.
You know, well, when you're in that state, a lot of things sound like a good idea.
That's true. You guys were quite drunk.
Yeah. And what you didn't realize in the moment was that we were going to do a river float the next day.
Right.
And that's an open wound, baby.
Right. You know? I didn't even think about that. Oh, but he had the like sanitizing tape on it. So like nothing would really get under it. But that is a bold move.
Right. If it stays on.
It does.
Yeah.
But that's a gamble to see if the tattoo shop even had that, because some places don't. Anyway, I'm glad that you had a good time.
Yeah. What's your good thing?
My good thing is that we kind of like stumbled upon a little fair happening in our city, and we got to just like walk around, and it was cute and fun. And then we like ate outside, which was lovely. There was live music happening because we stumbled into this festival. Yeah, it was a lovely day, and I'm glad that the weather is getting nice. I think I might even swim tomorrow.
First swim of the summer.
Yeah.
Folks, it is here, and I am excited.
If you know anything about me, you know that I love a pool.
Mm-hmm.
It's in my blood.
If you know anything about me, you know I love a garden.
Right. Thank you so much for listening. If you would like to check out bonus episode 40, we have 40 bonus episodes over on our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. They are full length and our patrons vote on them. So you can do that too. Go over there, check it out. It's really good. You won't regret it. If you want to see the pictures we post of all the stories we talk about, check us out on Instagram, nottoday_podcast. If you or anyone you know has a story of survival or something crazy that's happened to you and you'd like to share it with us on an upcoming listeners episode, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. We have a TikTok that is Not Today Podcast and a Twitter that is Not Today Podcast, but the TM Mana Podcast is a 3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.